This podcast is brought to you by MyScore IQ. MyScore IQ services are here to help you be prepared when it comes to making big financial decisions, such as buying or refinancing your home or purchasing that new car. Try it out for only $1 for a 7-day trial. You'll receive your FICO scores from all three major credit bureaus, along with active credit report monitoring and alerts for changes to your credit report and possible suspicious activity.
MyScore IQ services can help you be in the best position possible when you take that step to apply for a home or auto loan, all for $1 for a 7-day trial. Visit MyScoreIQ.com/Todd to learn more. That's MyScoreIQ.com/Todd.
Welcome back to the Talking Stocks podcast. It's what we do. Joe and Todd with you here. Todd, we missed you last week. Glad things are back in order in the Campbell household.
It was a little bit of a shaky day there. I had my second shot and it went well. That was fine. But I wasn't sure how that was going to play out. And then we had some people in and out of the house. And sure enough, next thing I know, I've got water coming into my basement. So
it was just fun.
One thing after another. I was like, oh my God, you know what? We need to regroup, solve these problems. And then, you know, listeners, apologize. Glad to be back at it again this week, though.
Yeah, full disclosure, I had my second jab a few hours ago. I've got one heck of a sore arm right now, but I'm powering through. But if I pass out on my keyboard halfway through this episode, that's why. I'm not like having a medical emergency or anything.
Well, Joe, so, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a lot of people are getting very creative in how they're trying to, you know, incentivize people to go and get their shot if they've been a little hesitant to do so. So they've coming up with all these marketing plans. So I was having some fun with it the other day. I was like, a beer for a spear,
Yeah,
pot for a shot.
Yeah. I saw like a now for a jab or something. Yeah.
We're seeing a whole lot of creativity.
It's clever. I love to see it. I know one of your favorite companies, Sam Adams, was doing a promo. I don't know if that's still active, but it was if you brought your vaccine card to a bar, I think they would give you a free Sam Adams draft.
Oh my God. How did I miss this news? This is a game changer for me.
That was a few weeks ago. I don't know if that's still active, but yeah, it might be.
People, you can be furiously moving away from the podcast to see if this is for real.
Todd, we might have to meet up at like Thirsty Moose in Dover after this or something.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, so I want to dive into it because we've got 2 weeks of news kind of on backlog now. And so as we've started off many of our shows in 2021, let's talk about crypto a little bit. I can't believe I'm saying this, but let's talk Dogecoin, Todd.
Well, we get the Doge father, Elon Musk, going on Saturday Live on Saturday, I think, right?
Oh, is it this Saturday?
Yeah, I've seen some stuff with him recording promos and stuff this week. And I know
I can't wait for that. That's going to be a blast.
Yeah, I'm sure there could be some fun skits there. I mean, hey, buy the rumor, sell the news is the famous saying for a reason. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not, people bought ahead of maybe hoping that, you know, they're going to get some free publicity for Dogecoin over the weekend. And then, you know, maybe people profit take and walk away from it next week. I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I bought a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean like $100. I bought like $100. I was talking to my son, who's 18, and you know, he made a good point. He was like, "Hey, Dad, it might be fun, and if you were going to go down to Foxwoods or something, you'd probably spend that at one of the, you know, tables playing blackjack or something.
Right.
And if you lost it, you'd be like okay with it because you had some fun." And I'm like, "It's not a bad point, so why not?"
Yeah, it's definitely all of these kind of meme cryptos and like altcoins that are coming up now. It does feel like gambling a little bit, but I agree. There's some fun to it. I have not, I have not put any of my own money into Dogecoin yet, partly because I'm on Coinbase and Dogecoin is not supported on Coinbase. Not exactly sure what the reasoning is behind that. I mean, maybe just because they're public and, you know, they care about their bottom line.
Well, I think they're they're maybe a little bit more hesitant because they're public now and they're regulated, you know, and Gemini has allowed doubt. That's where I actually bought it. Gemini now, as of this past week, is allowing it. And I have a small amount of crypto on Gemini. So I was like, oh, I'll just take it there. But they're still private. So maybe they have a little bit more flexibility in what they're willing to do and not, you know, evade some of that regulatory scrutiny or whatnot. But, you know, actually in the crypto front, it's not Bitcoin that's caught my eye. I mean, Ethereum's been an absolute monster. If you want to enable my sharing, Joe.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
A couple charts here for people who are listening on one of the major platforms like Spotify or Apple. We also
go ahead
to YouTube. And when we post them to YouTube, that, you know, you can always go back here and check them out and see the charts that we're sharing. And Joe, can you see? I just happen to have Peloton up because I had Peloton up, but
yep.
I want to pull up the Grayscale Ethereum Trust.
Yeah.
Is the first one. And Joe, you can see that chart, yeah?
Sure can.
I mean, just look at this monstrous.
That thing's a beast.
Yeah. I mean, and remember, listeners, the Ethereum Trust, it's not, you're not owning it direct. You're not owning the Ethereum directly this way. You know, it's a trust. So it's a company that's issuing shares. You're owning shares in the company that owns underlying Ethereum. Okay. So you can get disconnects where theoretically the shares in Ethereum Trust would trade lower than the value of the underlying Ethereum they own, or higher than the underlying Ethereum that they own. So that's the premium or the discount. You want to be aware that that can happen, right? I do own the trusts for Ethereum and Bitcoin in my IRA. And, you know, it's just easier for me. So I have a Fidelity IRA. I can actually buy these two and own them in my IRA and not worry about the tax consequences if I trade them relatively actively. So that's why I'm mentioning these or showing these as the charts, Joe. But anyways, I mean, you can see this just monstrous move as people have gotten excited about the use cases of being able to build products that can be sold on the blockchain and using Ethereum as the cryptocurrency of exchange for these non-fungible tokens or these potential other services and everything. But the one that really caught my eye, let's see if I can remember the symbol here. I own Litecoin, but this one I own on Coinbase, and I actually own the underlying coin on Litecoin. But I mean, there is a Litecoin trust. I mean, look at this move that it's had just since March, from 95 to 400 yesterday.
That's amazing.
Yeah, just a huge move in Litecoin. So I've actually been thinking, hey, if I get a pullback in Litecoin, it looks like I'm getting it today, down 16% on the Litecoin trust today. Maybe I'll actually add that in my IRA as well. So I might be a little bit active later on today on that. And like I said, I own the Bitcoin. That's just been going sideways for the last couple of weeks as some of these other cryptos have been catching attention. And then, of course, you know, Joe, for the people who don't want to buy crypto but want to benefit from crypto, there's a couple different ways. Coinbase, obviously being publicly traded now. You know what's funny? I was laughing about this reference price. You know, and remember, we've talked about Coinbase in a couple shows now. Thing, you know, opened up at 400 on its first day of trading with this mysterious reference price of 250. And I was like, yeah, a lot of good that reference price does. Wouldn't you know, we actually touched 250 yesterday. 250.51 was the low yesterday, Joe, and bouncing off of that. And I actually do own some Coinbase in my IRA, and I think that's might be an intriguing area to consider it if you're so inclined. But Square and PayPal are also ways that you can get backdoor exposure to, you know, the people who are providing transaction services, allowing people to buy or sell Bitcoin. PayPal as well is another one that would allow you to do that. So yeah, that's kind of this week's crypto update.
Yeah, I only have Coinbase on my phone, and so if you're wondering why I'm kind of looking down, it's because I have it up here. And so I was just looking at the different prices of the ones you mentioned, and Ethereum topped out at 3610 yesterday. A month ago it was below 2000. Litecoin, as we're recording this, is trading at 347, peaked at 372 just this morning, actually. And that's up from a low of 207 back on April 22nd, I think. So yeah, crazy movement. And then meanwhile, Bitcoin's been flat. So
yeah, the only thing I would say is, just for full disclosure, I was 80% of my crypto, I call it my crypto experiment. It's not a lot of money. I'm just playing around, getting comfortable with these things. But 80% of it was in Ethereum. And I think, 17% was in Bitcoin and 3% was in Litecoin. That did change because once I got up 100% in my Ethereum, I cut it in half. So now I'm just playing. I'm going to let the rest ride. I'm going to play with the house money on Ethereum.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm probably more along the lines now of 40-40-10 or something like that.
Yeah. All right. So let's pivot. It's been a big week for earnings, and so we thought it might be a fun thing to do to kind of make this a little bit of like a reaction video or reaction podcast to a couple of interesting but very different earnings reports. And so we thought that we'd look at Roku and Etsy this week. And those, if I'm not mistaken, have had very, very different price movements post EPS. So,
right. And in preparation, Joe, in full disclosure, listeners, I have not looked at either of these press releases.
Nor have I.
Yeah, I did. So I wanted it to be, okay, I've seen the action. Okay, I know what the stocks did. But yep. I have not read through these yet. So it'll be interesting to pull these up and actually take a look and see how these companies did. And just as a general aside, Joe, it has been a tough earnings season. And listeners, I get it. Okay, you're seeing great, quote unquote, great earnings reports with companies posting better than expected revenue and better than expected earnings. And guess what? The stock's trading down, right? And you're like, what is going on? And that happens. It happens. And I'll tell you why it happens, Joe. It happens because over the last few quarters, people have gotten used to making money by buying a day or two ahead of the EPS report and then flipping it the day of the EPS report for a quick profit. Well, I'll tell you, when everybody starts doing something, it's going to stop working. it absolutely. So now you've got a ton of people who were front running these things, who, guess what? Their only interest was selling that next day. So it didn't matter if it was a good report, they were selling it, right? It didn't matter if it was a bad report, they were selling it. And I think the other part of that is you had, technologies, the rotation that we've talked about for months towards these late cycle, mid-cycle, late cycle stocks and away from technology has continued. And I think a lot of portfolio managers who, obviously are managing millions of shares, right? On a normal day with normal volume, Joe, they can't unload millions of shares. They would move the stock too much. But on a day where there's a lot of activity because of earnings, guess what? They can sell into that. So even if you have a good report, you could have institutional weight against you just because they're using that liquidity as their opportunity to reduce their exposure, lock in their gain, free up some cash to reposition towards some of these other cyclical baskets like, the steel stocks or the copper stocks or whatever.
Right. All right. So I'm going to share my screen here. As usual, as we remind you every week, we post these on YouTube. So if you're interested in kind of following along with us, I will make sure that the YouTube link is in the podcast description on Spotify and all of your other favorite platforms. So here we are. Here is Roku's earnings report. I'll zoom this in a little bit just so it's a little bit easier to read. And I mean, 79% year over year, that pops to me. Platform revenue 101%, gross profit up 132%. Wow. What I this company is just really interesting to me. Like, I don't understand how they manage to be as successful as they are, considering the amount of alternatives that there are on the market, right? Like, I don't know of a TV that, like a flat screen TV that you can buy now that doesn't have a smart TV capability built into it. Plus there's Chromecast, plus there's Apple TV, plus there's Amazon Fire Stick. And I mean, these numbers, these revenue numbers are not huge, but they're nothing to laugh at. They're nothing to balk at either, right, Todd?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, scroll up a little bit there. So yeah, yeah. That's 79. So you got 574 million. So, you know, just round up for math, 2.4 billion run rate annually in sales, a 79% growth. That's pretty gosh darn nice right there. Platform revenue up 101%, added 2.4 million incremental active accounts, right? Which they can monetize.
Right.
So they're now at 53.6 million. And imagine they're monetizing in a few different ways. Listeners, right? So it's not just you buy a Roku device in a Best Buy or something, right? You could buy, you can get exposure to Roku through the TVs that you're buying at Best Buy instead of just the buy. So if you upgrade and you have a Roku enabled TV, right? So they're collecting probably some licensing revenue or something like that from the TV manufacturers, right? So, or they could be getting subscription revenue from the people who are subscribing to the Roku service. Or they could be getting advertising dollars from people who are using the platform to advertise to you. And they do share your information and your engagement with the platform, making, you know, those advertising dollars pretty valuable, right? So I think that that's, it's kind of that three-legged stool, and it's clearly, it's working for them. But one of the things I was curious about, Joe, here, we looking at those active accounts, right? Just to see whether or not we see any slowing, because you talked about a lot of competition. So we see 2.4 million. And that is, I guess that is down a little bit, right? From Q3, Q4, which changed from 46 million to 51.2.
Yep.
And it's below Q2 to Q3 20, right? Which was 3 million.
Right.
And it's below Q1 to Q2, which of 2020, which was, 3 point something.
Yeah. So it's about 51.2 to 53.6. So yeah, a little over 2 million. It's still, that's not that bad. Like, as far as if you're looking for consistent growth, I mean, I think I would want to see like what Q2 looks like, but I mean, that's slowing down very slightly, I would say.
Yeah. And I mean, well, the other thing that jumps out at me here too, is that think about this, you have a total net revenue growth of 79%, but active accounts were only up 35%. So that suggests to me that each account is more valuable.
Right. And you see right here, average revenue per user grew to $32.14, up 32% year over year. So there you go.
Yeah. So every user is 32% more valuable than it was a year ago.
Which is very important. Like, that's probably, that might be the most important fact in these highlights here, except for perhaps the gross profit up 132%.
I suppose that kind of is kind of like the Netflix story too, right? They had to sell, get deceleration, maybe law of big numbers, right? Deceleration and new account activations. But if they're able to monetize at a higher pace for each one of those users, then that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So just scrolling through here.
Let's go up. Actually, scroll up to sales and marketing. So sales and marketing, total gross margin. So what are they spending on sales and marketing? Looks like
88 million.
Yeah, up about 30%. But, you know, I mean, they're spending less than the revenue growth, right?
Right.
And general administration went up a good amount. But gross margin did improve. Total gross margin did improve.
Yeah.
So that's good. And then the outlook looks pretty solid, right? 610 to 620.
Net income of 10 to 10 to 20.
Hard to poke holes in that.
This looks really good. So now we're just, again, listeners, we're just scrolling through here. So now we're kind of into the just text version of this.
Look at that streamed hours in that first paragraph.
18.3 billion. Wow.
And look at that increase.
I want to do some quick math here. So that's 53 million accounts. 18. Oh, hold on.
Oh, geez. Carry the one.
Oh, boy.
18 billion. While Joe breaks out his, what is the old math device from old Middle East?
The abacus?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I was just looking at here while you run that number is that, you know, you've got this, that's probably why, you know, you saw just average user value has gone up, average revenue per user. I mean, 49% more engagement, more hours streamed on the platform. That's
339 hours, viewers. So that's, is that,
so that's going to be per.
So that's just in the quarter, right?
Per quarter, yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
And it looks like they unveiled a couple new products, the 4K Plus.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the whole concept here is for Roku to make a very asset light option for the TV manufacturers. So it'll run on, you know, equipment that the TV, not expensive equipment, right? Not expensive chips, whatever. Because for a TV manufacturer, it's kind of a commodity. They got to keep their expenses as low as possible. And Roku provides them with the ability to, you know, have a very engaging content experience that's a good marketing for people that go in TV and say, yeah, well, I want to cut the cord. I can get a Roku enabled, right? And they allow to do it. And it's probably a lot cheaper for them to have Roku handle all that.
Right.
Than it is for them to try and do it. And they certainly don't want to be, you know, having high
I also just, equipment, right? I just noticed they're producing their own content now too. So they have their own channel, which makes sense. They have their own channel on their platform. And so they're producing stuff like Apple is.
Yeah, and if you go back up there, look at that. It says Roku is enabling it advertisers. The Roku channel is enabling advertisers, becoming the channel's number one show in first weekend. Da, 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 da. So that's the cipher that you talked about relatively.
Yep.
That's potentially big, right? So I mean, it has its own channel now, and it can, you know, pocket the advertising dollars directly from, you know, people from people that way.
Oh, and they just acquired the show This Old House. So there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. So anything else you want me to kind of look for here, Todd? Or do you want to switch to our other?
No, I think once you bounce out of that for a second, I'm going to share my screen. And I just want to see a couple different things. So let me just share my screen now. Go back there, click over there. Pull up that, go to here. And I'm just gonna go on Seeking Alpha real quick. And I wanna punch it up and see what the actual numbers were relative to, spikes. Yeah, so the stock was trading up. And Joe, maybe you can see what the stock's doing right now.
Yeah, I've got it up right here in my Fidelity terminal. So it's up 11% today, is that right?
Not a bad response. Not a bad response. You know, I was saying earlier how everybody was gaming EPS by buying and then selling the next day. One of the things I tweeted earlier this week is that we saw that change this week where nobody wants to own a SaaS stock or a high-tech stock or one of the SPACs or anything prior to their earnings release because everything was getting destroyed. So the last couple of days, what we saw is people selling the shares off ahead of the EPS, which if you think about it, flips that whole trade upside down because now what are they going to do? They're going to cover. So the incentive is for them to cover the shares and have them rally. And Roku obviously bent there. So revenue of 574 beat by 83 million and the gap EPS beat by 67 cents.
So it looks like this is probably their biggest volume day ever, 14 million and counting.
And if I pull up my chart on Roku, yeah, I mean, that's an acceleration.
Not their biggest, but their biggest for 7 or 8 months.
Interesting. Yeah, and look at what I was saying before, Joe, about how nobody wanting to hold into earnings. Look at that distribution the last 5 days, all the way down to the 200-day, and then the pop today. But if you look at that revenue number, it's the highest in at least 4 quarters. And if I go on my MarketSmith chart, yeah, that's the highest. This goes back to June 2019, and this is the highest one.
Crazy. I got to be honest, I might buy this as soon as we stop recording here. I'm seeing if I have enough cash to deploy. Yeah, I very well might buy this stock as soon as we log off here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's the argument against it has been, well, it's like you said, it's a commoditized service or whatever, or it's just a stick that you stick into your TV. But the light bulb moment for me last fall when I finally woke up and bought it was that no, it's much more than that. It's software. It's
right.
It's the software that's important. It's not the hardware. It's the fact that they're able to you know, allow all of these other manufacturers to provide to be their marketing, basically, to provide it embedded on these TVs and then be able to leverage that software, that embedded software, for advertising dollars and subscription dollars and people who want to watch a movie tonight for $4.99 and you know.
Absolutely.
So it's interesting. Okay, so let's move on to the next one.
All right, yeah. So now I want to take a look at Etsy. So moving over, go into the press release here. All right, so this could be a different story. I know that I own a little bit of Etsy, and yesterday was not fun. It was down, I think at one point it was down like 15%. So here we go, highlights. Oh, this is not as easy to read as Roku's was.
All right, so
wow,
gross merchandise sold, maybe GMS is probably something like that. 3.1 billion. So if you go up to the top there, yeah, okay, yeah, so consolidated GMS, so
wow.
Consolidated GMS was 3.1 billion. Only up a very little, 132% year over year. Etsy Mark, okay, consolidate. And then it's a marketplace was 2.9 billion. I don't know what the difference is. And then up 144%. GMS per active buyer for the Etsy marketplace on a 12-month basis grew 20%. Etsy marketplace acquired 16.3 million new and reactivated buyers who haven't purchased in a year or more. That sounds good. Paid channels was 21%. Consolidated revenue was 550 million. All right, yeah. So now, so you've got how much is being sold, then you've got how much are they able to book as revenue? 550 million, up 141%. Consolidated revenue, better than 17.5. Okay, net income.
It's crazy. Like, to me, this looks just as good as Roku, right?
Arguably better. Net income, yeah. 144 million, up 1,000%. Okay, all right. So they were obviously able to leverage the scale of all this increased activity against their fixed costs, right?
I haven't read this yet. I own a little bit of Etsy, as I said before, and I was like, I was watching the thing just plummet yesterday, and I was pissed. Like, because I only saw the headline and it looked really good. And now I'm like even more upset. Like, why? It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. But now I'm looking at it and I'm seeing these amazing numbers and I'm thinking to myself, maybe I'll use this opportunity to expand my position.
All week long, Joe. I mean, if you've been a tech investor, you've woken up and been like, what?
No, it's been absolutely disgusting. How is
it possible that it's down?
Right.
All right. So it took a differentiated value position. It's like an online flea market, Etsy, right? I mean, people are creating their own crafts and building their own things and selling them, and theoretically a lot of one-off items and
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of art. I have a relative who she does like kind of small woodworking stuff. So, you know, little household items, and she sells on Etsy. And so it's kind of a way for, if you're not familiar, it's kind of a way for people to increase the footprint of their kind of craft hobby and turn it into a small business. And it works very well from what I've heard. The seller fees are kind of steep, but it's, you know, there's no other way that my aunt in Maine would be able to reach a potential customer in California. And she's been shipping all over the country. And so there's definitely something to be said about the increased footprint and increased exposure.
Yeah, let's scroll down a little bit more. Let's take a look.
Sure.
All right, so here we go. Revenue of $550 million, up 141%. Great. Services revenue, just, okay. Gross profit, operating expenses. Operating expenses went up more than I would have thought, but still less than revenue, which is nice.
I wonder what they consider services.
We'd have to look at the 10K to see what the difference is between that. So I don't know if you want to try and pull up their 10K in a separate screen, or maybe I'll do it as we're talking here.
Sure.
The other thing that I see on here is the active sellers and active buyers is interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, people obviously are finding out about it, right?
Yep. So this is in thousands, right? So this is 4 million active sellers, 4.7 million, I think. Yes, in thousands. Okay. So yeah, 4.7 million active sellers and almost 91 million active buyers, which is up from less than 50 million at this time last year. That's remarkable. I know they've been really increasing their marketing efforts over the past year. I mean, I see their ads in the limited TV I watch, and I see their ads on streaming and really all over the place. And so I guess it's been effective for them. But yeah, now that I'm looking at these details, I'm honestly much more impressed with this than I am with Roku. And that Roku report was a blowout. So,
all right. So I'm actually on their 10K right now, Joe.
Okay.
Service revenue is comprised of the fees a seller pays us for optional services, which help Etsy sellers generate more sales and play a key role in enabling sellers to scale their business. We believe we can grow seller optional paid service in three ways: by expanding the utility of the services, expanding the reach of the services, and launching new services. For Etsy Marketplace, primary optional services include on-site advertising services, which allow Etsy sellers to pay for prominent placement of their listings in the search results.
Okay, that's, yeah, that'll do it.
And Etsy,
so like a Google search ad.
Yeah, Etsy shipping labels, which allow people to buy shipping at a discounted rate. 22% of active Etsy sellers use the advertising platform, and that's from their 10K. So yeah, so that explains that. You know, so yep. You've got the service revenue up 90%. So more people are advertising on the platform, and their overall revenue, that's probably because the revenue, their marketplace revenue is up 165%. So the gross merchandise sold is up 132%. So people are making more money, and they're saying, oh, I'll reinvest some of that back into advertising. Or because so many more sellers are on the platform now, they're finding, in order to maintain their pace of sales, because of increased competition from other sellers, they have to advertise and elevate themselves in the search results.
Yep.
Perhaps.
viewers and listeners, I must confess, I just doubled my position in Etsy while we're recording.
So what's Etsy? Is it up today? Is it down today? What's it doing today?
It's up 4% today. Okay. Here, I'll stop sharing and you can pull up their chart on MarketSmith.
All right. So let's do that. So we'll flip back over, and this is just the 10K that I was looking at. I'll minimize that, and we'll swap over to Etsy. And we can see, again, the revenue acceleration up 141% year over year to $551 million. That's better than the 129% year over year growth in the December quarter, before that 128, before that 137. If I go to the weekly, again, highest since at least June 2019. Going back to the daily here, $3 expected this year, up 12%, $3.65 expected next year, up 22%. And this is what Joe was talking about, the big sell-off. Again, Joe, same thing with Roku, right? Nobody wanted to own in front of that earnings. And then sure enough, this was the difference, though, was yesterday versus today, where today, a lot of these things like Roku reported last night and they're buying it, where yesterday it was still people selling.
Right.
It undercut the 200-day. Now, typically, I don't like owning stocks when they're below the 200-day moving average, but I absolutely am okay owning a stock like this because it's really not that far below the 200. And a lot of times what you'll see is a stock will undercut the 200-day moving average for a day or two and then refine its footing and recapture. So I typically avoid selling that first day. And actually in our scores, Joe, for the model, free trial below to see the research reports. The model really doesn't start punishing scores heavily until they're more than 5% or more below the 200-day moving average. So there's a kind of like, I believe, if you put a band on either side of the 200-day moving average of 5%, we really start rewarding when it's above 5% above, and we start really punishing when it's below 5% below. So we're not there. And the key here would be, my feeling is that usually gaps fill. They don't always fill, but usually they do. You get a gap all the way to 181. I'd like to see this build a little bit more and keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks. But Joe is all in.
I am all in.
And then if I go back here, just doing the same thing that we did with Roku and Seeking Alpha's site. Don't want to type that again. Type up Etsy. And let's take a look and see. Yeah, so they beat on both the top and the bottom line. They beat on the bottom line by about 20 million. They beat on the top line by about 20 million. They beat on the bottom line by about 12 cents. So,
pretty good.
That's obviously good to see as well. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. Viewers and listeners, if you liked that, let us know. That was fun. We'd love to do it again sometime. So to wrap up this week, I know for a lot of us who are pretty tech heavy, it's been a tough week. And so I wanted to take some time at the end of the show here for you, Todd, to just highlight some of the bright spots in your portfolio this week. For those of you who follow Todd on Twitter, and you've been seeing his daily leaders, you'll notice there's just a little bit of a theme there, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. I guess I'll share my screen again. Let's pull up some energy charts. So
here we go.
I try on Twitter. I like to take a look and track, and you can do this yourself. I think it's useful. You can have a journal or whatever, listeners, and just keep track of what's winning and what's working. So every day I do it in the morning and I do it at the close. I look to see of the stocks that I own in my portfolio, what's working the best that day. And my goal in doing that is to sort of train myself to spot when certain trends are really exerting versus not exerting, and see if that really reinforces some of the sector work and the industry work that you can get in our reports, free link below. And so I wanted to pull up a couple of these stocks. One of them is Oceaneering International. And Joe, I think that this is one that really is interesting to me to pull up, because this is really, I wanted to point out the volume spikes on this thing, especially. Because if you look at this thing, I mean, look at 2.6 million shares in January, 2.6 million share day in January, 2.9 million day up day in February, 4.2 million up day in March. And then so far this week, well, last 5 days have been up, but two of them above average volume. And yeah, you had, you know, two above average volume down days here, but I mean, you got to take it in the aggregate. What do you see more of here, Joe?
Definitely more of the blue, which is buy volume, than the kind of reddish pink, which is sell volume.
Yeah. And listeners, just recognize too that, I mean, this is not retail buying. You know, this is not you going out and buy 50 shares, 100 shares, right? This is most likely big institutional funds starting to get this stock more and more into their portfolio. And as a result, you know, you've got a stock that when we first saw this big volume spike here back in November has gone from $6 to $15. So right. If you pull up Transocean, is another one. I mean, it's 145 million share up day in November. And then since then, you got one there, you got 140 million here, 76 million here, 27 million here. I mean, you have seen fewer of those in the last couple of months. But again, the sell volume is just, it's just not there. Since January, you've only had one day of above average volume on a down day. You know, so I think that, you know, users, people who are, you know, using these different charting services, put volume up, because I do think that it can be valuable and can kind of like, you know, confirm some of what you're seeing there. I also, Joe, wanted just to go back to the Seeking Alpha here, and let's take a look at our most recent reports so we can kind of take a look and see what's strong and what's weak here. If you go to, let's just look at our large cap stocks report. And these just got posted today. We do this every week. And you'll see the top of the ranking is still pretty non-growth. Financials, industrials, REITs, utilities, and energy.
Tech's in the basement.
Tech is in the basement. So then the question you get is, okay, well, Todd, you know, but look how good tech is doing right now. And I guess my response to that would be, yeah, well, one day doesn't make a trend, right?
I mean,
you have to, you know, you have to think about the risk reward. And this is a relative ranking. So, you know, this is simply telling you that the risk reward associated with technology as a whole basket is greater than it is for some of these other baskets that you could be investing in. So when you see technology at the bottom, and I invest in a lot of technology stocks. So when you see tech at the bottom like this, and a couple months ago, we pulled up a longer term chart that showed technology stocks over time and that score. And you could see multi-month periods that we saw that in 2018. We saw that again, I think in 2016 and May 18, and then maybe in the March lows of 2020, where you had this multiple month period where technology was below the average score. So it doesn't stay there forever, right? But it does, it's certainly telling you that the energy is focused on other spots. If you are a tech investor, the thing that I would do then is I'd say, okay, I'm just not gonna buy the whole basket. I'm gonna be very selective. So you're gonna be more selective, where you can be less selective in financials and pretty much just go out and buy many more of the financials. You've got tailwinds behind you. In technology, you would want to be more selective. And then if you could scroll down basically to the bottom and look at our industry ranking, and say, well, in technology, maybe I want to concentrate on computer hardware and information technology services, two baskets that are above average scoring, rather than say the semiconductors, which are now at the bottom, which is a stark contrast to what we saw last fall when we started recommending these things. No one wanted to touch them. Now, you know, on the bottom of our ranking, it's telling us that, you know, hey, there's better options for your money right now than semiconductors. So I just wanted to drive that point home. And for people, because they might be looking at the research going, well, what does technology being at the bottom really mean? Or how should I view that? So I just wanted to offer that up.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful. So I think with that, we'll wrap up unless you have any last words for us, Todd.
No, stay safe out there.
Yeah, stay safe out there. Yeah, fingers crossed I won't bonk out tomorrow after my second Moderna dose. But yeah, I'm excited to have full immunity and get back to some sort of normalcy. So yes, hang in there, viewers. Send us your questions and comments as always. Also, I'll drop another link to our Discord server in the show notes. So if you haven't joined that already, we've had some great conversation in there, and we'd love to have you if you haven't joined already. So with that, we'll leave it there. Take care, everybody.